So good morning. My name is Jasmine Turin. I'm a cancer prevention fellow in the Division of Cancer Control and Population Sciences at the National Cancer Institute. And I'll be discussing today behavioral surveillance research that NCI and CDC has developed over the past couple of years to monitor the impact of the HPV vaccine on cervical cancer screening and sexual behavior. And our key research question is to determine how we can maximize appropriate use of the HPV vaccine and screening to minimize existing disparities in cervical cancer mortality. As earlier presenter Susan and Davlina presented, cervical cancer is really one of our greatest success stories in the United States with the introduction of the Pap test in the 1950s. But there are still certain geographic areas, minorities, and low SES populations who underutilize the Pap test and therefore who would benefit the most from uptake of the HPV vaccine. And so in this talk, I'll be focusing on national efforts that we're doing to monitor uptake of the HPV vaccine, knowledge and attitudes, as well as potential changes in cervical cancer screening and sexual behavior that we want to focus on to make sure that we're not adversely affecting those important other strategies. And as Davlina mentioned earlier, we focus on cervical disease because of the greater cancer incidence and mortality relative to other susceptible organs, and the availability of effective technologies for prevention and control. I think it's really important to think about uptake of the HPV vaccine given the crowded information environment that we're currently living in. Introduction of the HPV vaccine has been accompanied by a media storm. In addition to direct-to-consumer marketing by Merck, which first focused on raising awareness about the link between HPV and cervical cancer, and then appealed to parents' fears about their daughters dying from cervical cancer, release of the HPV vaccine was a high-profile news story, with some stories highlighting the fact that it was the first cancer vaccine, and other stories calling it the promiscuity vaccine because of allegations that it could increase the likelihood of adolescents engaging in risky sexual behaviors. Also during this time period, Digene, the makers of the HPV test, launched a campaign calling into question the adequacy of the Pap test. You're not failing your Pap test, but it might be failing you. Content analysis of newspaper articles during this time period show that media coverage of HPV vaccine is sending out incomplete and mixed messages that may have an adverse impact on screening and sexual behavior. For example, only 29% reported that screening with a Pap test is still needed after vaccination because the vaccine only protects against two of the high-risk types. In addition, over 56% mentioned that the controversy about the vaccine promoting sexual behavior. And very few of those actually talked about the fact that no research has shown that the vaccine will actually increase sexual behavior. Given that complex media environment and the potential for adverse impact, I'll be describing the federally funded, publicly available behavioral surveillance systems in the U.S. that track population as well as provider knowledge, attitudes, and practices towards cervical HPV infection and cancer. For the purposes of public health practice, we define behavioral surveillance as the systematic, ongoing collection and reporting of data to monitor trends in individual and provider behaviors associated with changes in disease over time, identify populations at high risk, track changes in individual and environmental correlates of behavior, as well as guide the development, implementation, and evaluation of programs that encourage protective behaviors and discourage risky behaviors. As shown in this figure, there are six health outcomes which we've been discussing today in the progression from HPV infection to cervical cancer. The six outcomes are prevention of HPV infection, exposure to HPV, detection of an HPV infection, detection of a persistent HPV infection, diagnosis of precursor lesions or invasive cancer, as well as treatment. The corresponding behaviors that we're interested in monitoring are vaccine utilization, sexual behavior, screening with Pap and or HPV tests, depending on age, follow-up to an abnormal test, colposcopy and biopsy utilization, as well as the treatments of ablative, excisional, or radiation therapy, or hysterectomy and other surgical procedures. The key thing to think about is that access to care is an important thing to monitor along with all of these behaviors and is a highly determinant of use of all of these behaviors. Over the past 20 years, national surveillance systems have done a very good job of monitoring sexual behavior as well as screening with the Pap test, However, it's only in the past couple of years that we've begun to look at vaccine utilization as well as HPV test. So the first 8 surveys that are listed here alphabetically and on subsequent slides are national probability surveys of the US population. And they are important sources of data on health behaviors. And we use multiple surveillance systems because we need to allow for differences in the different survey objectives, the target populations that they collect data on, adolescents, young adults, or parents, as well as the frequency of implementation, the mode of administration, and the availability of biological specimens, which is only collected through the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. The bottom 2 surveys here are surveys of providers that offer important information on cross-sectional and temporal patterns of healthcare and are particularly useful during the initial dissemination of new technologies like the HPV vaccine. And in particular, these surveys can help identify research questions that need further inquiry. And of the 8 populations I listed on the previous slide, 7 have added questions about the HPV vaccine. The only one that's not is the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. The National Immunization Survey that Diana mentioned and the National Health Immunization Survey are the 2 main sources of information about uptake of the HPV vaccine, while the rest of the surveys mostly focus on ever using the HPV vaccine. It's important to note that these surveys will have to be flexible as we move forward because it'll be important to capture when they got screened and the age at which they got screened, if they were during recommended guidelines or whether it was as catch-up, because it may or may not affect the full protective factor of the HPV vaccine. In terms of impact of vaccine on screening, the first question is, will the vaccine uptake affect Pap test use? And related to this first question is the question, well, will young women think that they no longer need the Pap test because they got the vaccine? And when they do start getting the Pap test, will they be willing to extend the screening interval, as was recently discussed by Goldhaber and colleagues in the March issue of JNCI? Much of the cost-effectiveness models that have been developed in terms of appropriate use of the HPV vaccine as well as screening from this point forward believe that it's important to extend the screening intervals. We extended in 2003 from an annual to a 3-year basis, which has not been really taken up by the population, and it's predicted that screening intervals will be extended even further to 5 or more years. Further, in terms of the second question, as more women become aware of the link between HPV and cervical cancer, will the vaccine increase patient demand for and provider use of the HPV test? And finally, as I mentioned at the beginning, the vaccine will only have an impact on mortality and treatment if the populations who have historically underused screening get the vaccine. Because adding questions to these national surveys adds cost as well as increases respondent burden, NCI and CDC have sought ways to understand impact by adding appropriate vaccine-related responses to existing questions. For example, the NHIS and HINTS, when women are asked why they didn't have a recent Pap test, we've added new response options such as because I got the HPV vaccine or because I got the HPV test instead. Similar response options are available for the question about future intention to get a Pap. Currently, HPV test questions are only asked on provider surveys, although items are proposed for the NHIS in 2010. However, it's unclear at this time whether women can accurately report whether they got the Pap and or HPV test, given that the test characteristics are similar and they might not be told that their liquid cytology sample was also tested for HPV. As an example of data that would be collected and analyzed is shown with this chart from the National Health Interview Survey. To address disparities, we are interested in whether the populations listed here who underutilize the Pap test get the vaccine. And this is of particular concern because previous studies have shown that minority and low SES populations can be slow to adopt new technologies. For example, cognitive interviews that we conducted this summer at the National Center for Health Statistics found that African Americans were very suspicious of the vaccine because it was for a virus that they had never heard of. And so it raises important questions about health education and health communication efforts to help people understand why only now they're hearing about HPV after rollout of the vaccine. In terms of impact of the vaccination on sexual behaviors, unintended consequences of vaccination are increase in risky sexual behavior. As I showed earlier, content analyses of newspapers found that controversy about the effect of this vaccine was frequently mentioned. And studies have shown that parents who believe the vaccine would have this effect reported that they would be less likely to have their child vaccinated. And pediatricians who thought that parents of their patients held this belief were also less likely to bring up the vaccine with their patients. And for these reasons, the possibility of a negative impact on the vaccine on sexual behavior can and should be monitored. There are three population surveys that focus on measuring sexual behavior. The National Survey on Family on Health, National Survey on Family Growth, sorry for that typo, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, as well as the Youth Risk Behavioral Surveillance System. One of the key issues is consistent measurement across surveys, and for several items, the YRBS is less comparable, and as of right now, it is the only national survey that does not include questions about HPV vaccine uptake. As an example of the data that could be collected and analyzed is shown with this figure from the National Survey on Family Growth. We could examine whether the reasons for not having had sex shift among vaccinated adolescents, and data on this could be used to inform health education and communication efforts, as well as design tools to help parents make informed decisions about the vaccine. Because of all of the population surveys, with the exception of the NIS, National Immunization Survey, as Diana mentioned, relies solely on self-reports, a key limitation is accuracy. Another limitation is our ability to determine causality because all of these surveys are cross-sectional. We really need longitudinal surveys. However, tracking adolescents and young adult populations is challenging due to their geographic as well as their healthcare system mobility. Finally, findings from large-scale national data often cannot be disaggregated to subpopulations or local communities, and small area data collection and analyses are needed to understand disease burden as well as to implement and evaluate cancer control programs. As a result, we strongly encourage local and regional surveillance efforts like the California Health Interview Survey. To make this data most useful, we recommend that local area researchers match questionnaire content to national surveillance efforts, link data to cancer registries, as well as geocode data. In summary, there are several national behavioral surveillance systems that have included vaccine coverage items in 2007 and 2008 and plan to continue to do so. So we'll be able to collect data and monitor trends on the impact of the vaccine on screening and sexual behavior. However, because HPV risk, cervical cancer incidence, and mortality aren't concentrated in particular geographic areas as shown in this map, and these areas also reflect high concentrations of minorities and lower socioeconomic populations, local area data are really needed to evaluate cancer prevention and control activities, as well as to track progress in reducing disparities. And that is where local area researchers as well as health departments can really help and supplement our efforts at the national level. Thank you. Sorry, and I just wanted to acknowledge my collaborators at CDC, Nicole Ladon, Mona Soraya, as well as other collaborators at NCI and across the country. Any questions? Yes. Go ahead. Yeah, you. Sorry. No. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I think it's really frustrating the way that the news media have been covering this issue. I think it's And something that a lot of the content analyses that I and others have been doing have been really wanted to monitor to provide feedback to the media about this issue of balanced information. Controversy sells. However, they're really not showing that we don't have any data that shows that the vaccine increases risky sexual behavior. And so I think, you know, I think we as researchers, as well as people in the community who talk with news reporters, have to be very careful in how we communicate with them to make sure that our views and our concerns are not misrepresented. YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavioral Surveillance System, it's unclear at this time. It was very difficult to add these questions consistently across the surveys. It requires a lot of coordination on many divisions in CDC as well as NCI. At this time, I'm unclear as to whether YRBS is planning on adding it. Right. So in terms of accuracy of self-report of HPV vaccine, we're actually conducting studies right now, CDC is, through the National Immunization Survey, to look at accuracy of reporting HPV vaccine. And so that will be able to supplement what we know in terms of accuracy of self-report of other vaccine behaviors. My collaborator, Nitty Jane, is actually in the process of analyzing that data from 2007 and is going to be publishing that. Hopefully it should be available by the end of the summer, early fall. Thanks.
First, with being able to track if the vaccine promotes sexual behavior at all, and again, what you said, how hard that would be, but also, I'm wondering how they'd even take into account if you give the child a vaccine younger, give them the vaccine at a younger age, if they're even going to know if they're getting that vaccine or what it's for. And then secondly, is there any data with parents when they're deciding whether to give their child the vaccine or not, whether one factor could be them wondering how long this vaccine would be effective, if it's only effective 5 years or 7 years, or again, something they don't know yet.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of actual questions in terms of how information about the HPV vaccine is being communicated to parents. There are no decision-making tools that are currently that have been evaluated and published to help parents make more informed decisions, and we're in the field right now. I know several researchers are in the field right now to develop those decision-making tools to help providers.
But I just want to, there are surveys out there right now asking parents, if they have not gotten their child vaccinated, what the reasons are. And so I think there will be some data on that issue, is whether or not concern about duration is getting an impediment.
I mean, the other thing is, you know, a lot of the newspaper articles have been really raising perceptions of risk for HPV infection and cervical cancer that could be construed as alarmist, given the fact that we have a very effective secondary prevention and control program. And so it's unclear at that time whether how that, you know, elevated perceived risk may or may not be increasing or not increasing vaccine uptake. All the data that we have right now are 5 years. You know, there are current plans, I know, through the Nordic countries to extend that a follow-up interval to see whether there will be a need for a booster and whether immune response decreases beyond that five-year standpoint. So, you know, it's basically a time issue.
But I just want to say that the data at 5 years look very good with no decrease. So I think the expectations will last much longer than 5 years. So that 5 years just really means, as Jasmine said, that there's only 5 years of data right now.
And so, I mean, some have hypothesized that the rollout of the HPV vaccine will be very similar to the rollout of the hepatitis B vaccine, and that eventually, due to practice and the way we implement healthcare delivery, that it will be eventually moved into the infant immunization schedule.